I'm Taylor Smurl.
Hey, I'm Liz June.
And this is
Neat!
Weekly Boozecast.
It's a history lesson with the twist.
I do love that.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of twists, what are we talking about today?
Well, it's a drink that sometimes has a twist.
Oh, it doesn't. Okay, yeah, you're right.
Sometimes it has an olive, but we'll get in. That's later. or an onion. We're talking about martinis.
Yay! Yeah.
So we're gonna be covering first. I've got a brief-ish history of the martini for you, plus a couple weird variations. And what are you talking about today, Liz?
I'm going to talk about James Bond.
Famous drinker of the martini.
Yeah, and famously an alcoholic, according to a study that was recently done. We'll talk about that later.
All right, cool. So, all right, let's get into the martini. Do you happen to know where the martini originated?
No, I don't, because I made you keep it a secret from me so I could be surprised.
Well, but the fact is, I don't know either.
Oh, no.
Because nobody knows.
What are we going to talk about on our podcast?
Well, I'm going to talk about all the maybe stories. I feel like this is literally every episode when I talk about the history of any cocktail, and we're like, nobody knows. Here's five possible stories, because this is basically every drink.
Great.
So
it's a mystery.
It is. But all the stories, they're all around the same time period. And I think the thing that always cements how long the stories can go is when it's first published. And we first see something sort of like a martini in a bartender's manual in like the 1880s. But all the stories take place prior to that for the most part. And they seem to be centered around the gold rush in California.
Oh.
Yeah. So the first story, I think the one that's most famously told, and it's because it's told by a very famous bartender, Jerry Thomas. Jerry Thomas is sort of like one of the MVPs of old school bartending. He's credited with a lot of classic cocktails. He wrote some of the first books on cocktails.
Oh.
Super cool dude.
Never heard of him.
Oh, yeah. Jerry Thomas. He worked at the Occidental Hotel in San Francisco. Now, he claims that he met a miner on his way to Martinez.
Miner like a gold miner, not like an underage person.
Yes, he served a child the first martini.
Wanted to make that clear.
Well, I understand the confusion because it's not normal you serve minors. I mean, right. In New York City, in certain parts of the country, is that still possible?
I mean, I'm sure it's happening everywhere.
Yes. It's true.
Behind closed doors.
I was still thinking like coal miners. Like, no, you're...
I mean, you can mine for a lot of stuff, but there's just a difference between a miner and a miner.
Well, so not babies.
No babies.
People with pickaxes. Looking for gold, specifically, at this time period. Not now. I don't know.
Are there gold miners still?
I don't know. Probably. Are you a gold miner? Listen to this podcast right now.
Let us know if you still mine for gold.
And what do you like to drink when you do? So Jerry Thomas claims that he met a miner in the sense of looking for gold. Yes. On his way to Martinez, which was a place with a lot of gold mines at the time. And the guy offered him in exchange for a golden nugget, a cocktail. So Jerry Thomas took the gold nugget and he made him a special drink, kind of made it up on the spot, and he named it the Martini or the Martinez, kind of goes back and forth, based on where the miner's destination was. But that drink, for the couple main problem for the story is that drink doesn't really look like a martini. It has the basic ingredients. It had gin, it had vermouth. It also had maraschino liqueur. It had bitters. The type of gin used was Old Tom gin, which is a sweet gin. So it's not quite the martini we know today.
Lots of sweet stuff in there.
Yeah. But then you actually have the story happening in reverse, which is another story you hear from the people of Martinez, who claims it originated there. And they say that a miner had just struck it rich. So he came to a local bar. He wanted champagne. The bar didn't have champagne, so the bartender just made something up on the spot based on what he had. For some reason, this bar just had gin and vermouth and a twist, I guess, probably at the time. This is before the Dirty Martini. No olives at this point. And so that's what he was given to celebrate the fact that he just struck it rich in a mine. And then later that same miner went to San Francisco to Jerry Thomas's bar and asked for that same cocktail. He couldn't quite remember what was in it. And so that's when the second version happened at the hands of Jerry Thomas. So it's the same story, but someone's saying it happened first here and then they went there. No, it happened first there and then they went here. It's hard to say.
Are those those are all the possible stories?
Nope.
There's more.
There's more. So I feel like those two are the most likely because it's two different people claiming the same thing around the same place at the same time. So one of them is probably true. But also, you have an Italian immigrant by the name of Martini. This is early 1900s. So this is after we get it published in the book. But he claimed that he made the one that we know and love, which is just Martini and Vermouth. And that was at the Knickerbocker Hotel in New York City.
Was this still gin or was it vodka now?
This is all gin. And then you also have, so there was a rifle used by the British artillery units in like the 1800s, or it was actually used from the 1870s to 1890, and it was called the Martini and Henry rifle. And some people say, no, it was named after this, and it was made in England, and it was because the drink was really powerful, which is funny because you do actually, it's not like that's the first drink to be named after a gun. The French 75, also famously named after a piece of artillery.
Oh.
So this is a common thing that Europeans did.
They like their guns and booze.
I guess so. And then super simply, there's Martini and Rossi Vermouth, which is a brand that's been around since the 1800s. And they claim, well, no, it was just Martini Vermouth mixed with anything. And it's named after the vermouth. So all of these, one of these, maybe none of these.
Maybe. Maybe nobody got it right. Maybe. We'll never know.
But yeah, so there's some possible, one of those is maybe the history of the martini. But in any case, it definitely originated sometime around the mid-1800s. Probably in America, but
maybe not. Yeah. That's another time that we're like, oh, it's so American because America first, but it's not really.
Maybe not.
But I wonder, do you happen to know like when, because nowadays when we think of martinis, I know that originally it was all gin, but nowadays when people order martinis, they kind of assume that it's going to be made with vodka. So do you know when that switch, or like, or the reason, or do you know anything about that?
Well, so back in this time, like in the early days of drinking, you could get a martini with vodka. It was a thing that happened, but it had a whole other name. It was called a kangaroo.
A kangaroo?
Yeah.
Why?
So, I don't know. That's what it was called.
It was just a fun name.
That was the name for a vodka martini. Now, there was a big push in like the 60s and 70s, like after kind of this gets into like the cultural revolution of alcohol. Like we had the 50s and then everybody rebelled in the 60s and we didn't want to drink what our horrible dads drank. So we didn't want bourbon anymore.
Right.
And then kind of in the gap that made, you had vodka coming to arise in America. And that is really when you start seeing the vodka. I mean, you had the martini launch happen before that, but that was still a gin martini. This is when you see vodka kind of getting in wherever it can.
Do you think it's particularly rebellious because this is like after the McCarthy era and like vodka is Russian, right? Well, so like, is it like now that we don't have to, that now that we don't, not only do we not want to drink our dad's drinks, we want to kind of stick it and drink like some communist liquor.
Not specifically, because the generation, I mean, we're talking like the 60s, hippies really didn't drink as much as they did drugs.
Right.
So they weren't even going to stop. They were like, haha, we're going to drink the communist booze. Like, no, we're going to drop acid.
Great. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. They just went like no booze at all. I mean, they
so
drank.
Who was drinking the martinis?
Well, this was like, it's just kind of like that started the trend away from brown spirits. And then that kind of created a vacuum where you have like moving into the 70s, the 80s, you know, you kind of get like. Like diet culture and vodka's like light, like so yeah, like the switch can't, like there were a couple things that kind of handed it, like a lot of campaigns, advertising campaigns for vodka that promoted the vodka martini. But when we talk about a martini, like up until just the past few decades, we're talking about gin,
right?
Of course we're gonna talk about him later, but James Bond famously had vermouth in his martinis, or vermouth, sorry, vodka in his martinis as well, but it was also cut with gin, and so, so it's not that people weren't drinking vodka martinis, it's just you had to call a kangaroo.
That's so cute.
It is cute. It's not the only weird variation that you hear in bars on martinis, so I'm going to give you a little rundown.
Oh, yeah, please do.
Yeah, so it's not... So this is the classic martini we're talking about. Oh, which I should say, the Martinez is still a cocktail in its own, that drink with sweet old Tom gin and maraschino. That still recognized as a whole other drink. It's just probably the thing that precursed the martini. So have you heard of a Churchill martini?
No.
Okay. So Churchill martini is named after Winston Churchill.
Okay.
It's basically the way he liked his martinis, it was just gin. Just cold gin.
Oh, okay. So yeah. That's like, what do we call that? Straight up?
Well, I mean, it's just...
Dry, right?
Well, not even dry. Vermouth. Like, dry means, like, only a little bit of vermouth, or you might, like, put the vermouth or in the glass and dump it out.
Extra dry.
Extra dry still, like, you're hinting some vermouth in there. The Churchill martini, as he said, you just bow in the direction of France as you stir the gin.
Oh, okay. Some ice.
Yeah, so that's literally that. Alfred Hitchcock also liked his martinis this way. He's accredited with saying that you just look in the direction of the vermouth bottle while you stir, and that's how you make a proper martini.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so if somebody... So
basically just cold gin.
Cold gin.
In a fancy glass.
Yeah. Like, that's it. That's okay. Churchill martini. It's just a way of getting straight cold gin.
Cool. If you went to a bar and you say, can I have a Churchill martini, would they know? Do people know?
I think a lot of bartenders know what that means. I mean, it's kind of a funny way to say, can I just have some chilled gin? which you could... It's like a... I don't want to say pretentious, because I would kind of enjoy the nod to history that someone's like, oh, I want it Churchill style. Like, oh, you want cold gin. You just want a glass of cold gin. Okay. Maybe with an olive in it. I think you would get it that way. I think you're more directly going to get what you want if you just ask for gin stirred over ice.
Okay.
Yeah. But, so there's one variety that you see a lot of called the Gibson.
I've heard of the Gibson. Wait, is that with... Let me guess. Is the Gibson the one with onions? It is! Oh, yes. Yeah.
It's got the little cocktail onion. Also, has like a million origin stories. I don't know who is fighting so hard to claim the Gibson martini. Because it is the exact same martini. Like, it is vermouth and gin stirred with... a cocktail olive instead of anything else. Like, that's it. That's
like an onion instead of...
An onion, sorry, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like, just the garnish is different.
The garnish is different. But you have all of these people. Like, there's an onion farmer in California that it's accredited to. There's, like, this really cute story about, like, an American diplomat who was abroad during Prohibition and wanted to, like, uphold his country's beliefs in not drinking. So he asked that he just be served a glass of a martini glass of water, and to mark his glass so he would know it was his, put an onion instead of an olive in it. So he was just not drinking anything. So I guess if you really wanted to serve somebody a Gibson martini, you just give them a glass of water with an onion in it.
Cute.
No,
it's not cute. So cute. But he started a trend, if that's true.
There's like the creator of the Gibson girl, like the artist, Charles Dana Gibson.
I don't know.
I think that's it. Supposedly he like asked the bartender, like, I love a martini, make it even better. And the way the bartender did that was by putting an onion in it. And so that was named after him.
Ah.
And once again, maybe one of these are true.
Maybe none of
them are true. But yeah, so... but while we're on this online topic of things that may or may not be true, we're going to talk about my favorite variety, not to drink, but the story is amazing. It's definitely, there's no way it can be true, but I hope it is. And it's the dirty martini.
So those are the ones I like.
Yeah. So I'm not a huge fan of dirty martini, but it comes about sometime in like the mid 1900s. We see like people putting olive juice in martinis, and the origin story for this is from the Yalta conference of 1945.
Ooh.
So the post-war conference, you have as the story goes, you have FDR, Churchill, and Stalin all involved in the creation of this cocktail.
Seriously?
Yes. So basically FDR had a hangover. And Stalin's like, well, in my country, when we have hangovers, we have pickles and vodka.
Yeah, that's a good cure for sure. I mean, well, the pickles part. I drink pickle juice sometimes.
Yeah.
But like, probably, I don't know. I mean, there is that. I always wondered how true the whole like hair of the dog thing is. I mean, I guess because like technically, since alcohol is a drug, you're going through a little bit of withdrawal. So if you have a little bit more alcohol, you'll feel a little better. Mm. But like, I'm not sure actually if that is science. I don't think it's science.
No,
I don't think that's real.
It's not.
You're just like, I don't know.
I don't even know. Getting drunk again.
You're just getting drunk again,
which will make you feel better. But then there's no way out of it. You just have to stay drunk. Forever.
Always.
Just forever drunk.
Which we don't recommend.
No. But you know, like, someone thought it worked. And they were like, okay, but we don't have pickles or vodka. And then Churchill is like, but I've got gin and olives.
Great, buddy.
Because Churchill loved his martinis, clearly. Why he had olives, I don't know. And so they made a dirty martini for FDR.
Lucky guy.
And that is when it became popular. There were like kind of a couple similar stories that all seem to tie it back to FDR being like the dude that like loved olives in his martini, and that's where it became popular, or olive juice rather. But
do you think he was hungover a lot?
I don't know. I mean, it was a stressful time. Like, like a lot of drinking during that time, but
and forever and always.
I just really want to believe that like these three like intense political figures, the combined effort gave us the dirty martini.
It's a good story.
It's a great story. It's
my favorite so far.
Yeah. Wait, better than the onion farmer?
He's cute too. He's a cute little onion farmer.
All right.
I kind of like am now just imagining, you know, those like little cartoons where you take a vegetable and you make it into a person and then put a little hat on them. So like a little farmer, but it's an onion dressed up as a farmer.
Oh, just an onion farmer, like a little man.
I know, but it's cuter if he's a little onion.
I like that. Just like a little gnome.
I'm not drunk right now, by the way. I just think vegetable people are cute. That's it.
I agree with that. Well,
that's why we're friends.
So we'll do a craft later.
Yeah, actually, we probably need to get an onion and make him.
Give him a little hat.
Bring him to life.
Just a little onion buddy.
Do you have a tiny hat? A tiny little farmer hat?
I can definitely make one so fast.
Okay. Good.
I have very specific skills.
Guys, we've got projects going on. We've got some projects.
Yeah, make a little onion familiar. The official mascot of Neat. All right. So the only other variety that I'm going to mention before I say this, I do want to make a statement because you see a lot of things referred to as martini. Appletini, like,
right.
Bananatini, like, no. There is obviously a martini glass, the V-shaped glass, and then I think a lot of people play fast and loose with anything that goes in there is a martini.
No.
A martini is just vodka or gin. Base spirit differs, obviously, in this day and age. And vermouth. Anything else that's called a martini but has, like, that's, it's just using the shape of the glass to get the name. So, I'm sorry. There's no, I will not include the origin of the appletini in this because it is not a martini.
And it's kind of gross. Sorry if you like them, but I don't. And this is half of my podcast, so I get to say that.
You can say
I
that.
I don't like them, appletinis. Get out of here, imposters.
You call it something else. Like, it's an apple sour, sort of, or I don't know. It's not a teeny.
It does sound cuter when you add teeny to it.
I mean, I think, like, any fruit followed by teeny sounds like...
Kiwi teeny.
Kiwi teeny. Oh, you picked the best one right away.
Kiwi teeny can be part of the martini family just because it's really cute.
Yeah, well, that's fine. I would allow the kiwi teeny in my family if I was a martini. Like, no. Not made of respectable ingredients, but it's so
but
cute.
But so adorable. Kiwi teeny.
Oh, man, we're making kiwi teenies, aren't we?
For the kiwi teeny.
Kiwi teeny. Kiwi teeny.
Which we haven't invented yet. Really.
Onion. What got a little onion buddy and a kiwi teeny out of this episode.
Oh, my God. We should make the little onion buddy farmer, and we should make a tiny martini.
The onion farmer can drink all the kiwi teenies. He wants. I feel like I've just made a D&D character of some kind.
Definitely.
I would totally play the onion farmer.
We gotta name him. Well, we have to create him first, and then we can name him.
It's true.
He'll name himself.
Well, do we name him Gibson after the onion farmer?
Oh my God,
name?
Gibson is such a...
Gibson the onion
such
farmer.
Such a cute name. I love it. I love you already, Gibson. Oh. So, you have one last martini on this list, don't you?
Yes, I do. So this is one that I get ordered at the bar a lot, and it's another one where I do not think people know what's actually in it, I understand why people want to order it, because it's a drink that is consumed by one of the most famous fictional drinkers we know, James Bond.
James Bond.
And it's the Vesper Martini. I only learned when researching this that the reason... So this is something that's always confused me about the Vesper Martini, is it's a split base. It has both gin and vodka in it. And I don't, like, why would you put both in there? And then the other ingredients, it's got vermouth, but then it also... Or, sorry, it also has Cookie Americano or Lillet. It's classically Lillet, but it's, like, an older Lillet that we no longer have around. So... Some sort of, like, aromatized, like, sweet quinquina. But the reason it has a split base is because the love interest in the book, who is named Vesper, is a double agent.
Oh.
So that was...
Ooh.
Ian Fleming just being Trixie.
So Trixie. Yeah. Trixie. I like that symbolism.
I know. And I guess after that character dies, James Bond never has another.
Oh, he's so sad.
I know, out of respect.
You know what he did probably after she died? I bet he drank some more. Because that was his main coping mechanism. How often do we see James Bond drinking? Bond, James Bond. So there was a study done that was less of a medical study and more of just like something they did for fun, for research. There was a report that came out proving that James Bond was indeed an alcoholic, not only because of the amount that he drank, but his tendencies. And I'm going to read a little bit of this study because it's just really good. It's great. So the study found that James Bond meets more than half of the criteria for alcohol use disorder as defined by the American Psychiatric Association. And in one of the films, Quantum of Solace, Bond consumed at least 6 of those Vespers. And that amount of alcohol, according to researchers, would have raised Bond's blood alcohol level to an estimated 0.36 grams per deciliter, which is almost high enough to cause a coma, heart failure, or even death. And, you know, but that's nothing, really. What were you going to say?
Well, because that is wow. Because that's my big complaint about when people order the Vesper, is that the way, if you make the drink according to the proportions in the book, it's like a 5-ounce drink.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's like a massive drink. They put a, just
does anybody ask for it, like, by the book?
Well, I think that that's just, like, if you did it that way. I mean, obviously, when you make it at a bar, you make it in respectable proportions, but
it's a lot.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Well, even, like, what he drank in the movies compared to the books was really nothing, because there is, there's one instance in which he consumed 50 units of alcohol in a single day, which is a level of consumption which would kill nearly anyone, which is, and that's according to this public health professor at the University of Otago at Wellington. That's some kind of research place they did to study at.
Oh.
So they concluded that this alcohol intake in the books put him at a high risk of multiple alcohol-related diseases and early death, and noted that his ability to function is really inconsistent with the physical, mental, and sexual functioning expected from someone drinking this much alcohol. So, you know, either he's like a superhuman or like he's just, yeah, no, like he would definitely be dead if this was a real amount that he drank.
It's like we've all had a few too many, and it becomes hard to like sit on a chair. This guy is like dealing with nuclear warheads.
Right. Well, I mean, they even actually in Die Another Day, they reference how much he has this problem. When they're conducting this body scan on him, the health, yeah, they allude to his health issues, saying liver not too good, and then the retort is, oh, it's definitely him then. And the you know, it's actually, this study is really fun because they concluded that they actually offered some suggestions on what he should do to help minimize his risks in the short term, because he's already pretty damaged in the long term, to say the least, of how much he's drank so far. But so their suggestions are he should avoid alcohol on the job, especially when taking on complex tasks, including aerial combat and helicopter gunships and deactivation of nuclear weapons.
Okay.
Probably pretty sound advice, but that these things are best done with a zero blood alcohol level.
I never have more than one drink when I deactivate nuclear weapons.
As you should. Yeah. Very responsible choice. They said they suggest to avoid drinking with sexual partners who may want to disable, capture, or kill him. Pretty sound advice. Yeah.
That one's hard to follow.
And also, they suggest to find other interests. For example, his nascent interest in lepidopterology. Guess what that is?
Lepidopterology. Well, I only know one of those words. No, I'm thinking lipid. It's not about body fat. I don't know.
It's the collection of moths and butterflies, which is commenting, you know, they assume that he's actually into this, because at one point he comments on, he expertly comments on M's collection of moths and butterflies.
So wait.
That's what they base, that he has this secret affection for butterflies. But that's what they suggest he do instead of drinking so much.
They think he should focus on collecting butterflies?
Yeah.
For a second there, I thought you were saying that is another thing that he should not do while in alcohol and impaired.
You know, probably.
That'd be nice.
It's a good idea, maybe, you know, like. No, that'd but I mean.
Like a good Sunday, like, let's saying, get drunk and go collect moths.
I mean, you know, it's just a little suggestion if you need to find another hobby. But they had a suggestion for his employer too, that his employer could be a little bit more responsible, to refer him to work funded counseling or psychiatric support services for managing his alcohol use disorder.
And these services should also determine whether he has any post-traumatic stress after killing so many people and having been tortured so often. And that just makes me kind of sad because that, you know, I mean, obviously, when they say it, it sounds obvious. But, yeah, he's probably just using all of this as a coping mechanism because, like, dude has seen some shit, right?
Yeah. That is very,
He's dealing with his PTSD.
Wow. I feel like, so this is like kind of makes Archer like a very aware, like for the amount of drinking that Archer does, it's like pretty clear spoof on.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I think they were pretty conscious of that trope, you know, that's paying, I don't know if you'd call it paying homage. Maybe it's more. So. Is it homage or is it, it's just satire. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's a satire.
It's a parody.
You know, I feel...
I like Archer.
I do too. I feel really bad for the fictional James Bond now that we've ended on his definite PTSD.
Oh, yeah. But he's got problems.
There is one problem that he could fix very easily.
What is that?
To stop ordering his martinis shaken, not stirred.
Why?
Because that's
how he does it.
But it's always been, and I know there's like a lot of people right now, they're going, I like my martini shaken, and yeah, fine.
They shake him up. That's what they do. It looks really cool. But they get him real cold.
So the shaken, not stirred thing comes from the books. Martinis were never shaken. I'm so sure somebody shook them, but they were almost always stirred before the James Bond books. And then that just became popular. It was a cool thing that he said. So everybody ordered them that way. Like, it probably helped their, like, martini sales for sure.
Yeah.
But it just changed the way they were made for, like,
decades. Did they have to create shakers? Were they around before then?
Yes. Okay. Yes, we
had shakers. I just asked a really dumb question, no, but I was genuinely curious.
We had shakers before then. We had to invent a whole new tool because of James Bond. No, but you know, traditionally it's like a stirred, like, liquor forward drink. When you shake it, it becomes you get a lot more dilution in it. It changes the weight.
Yeah. That probably would have been helpful for James.
Well, actually, yes. Shake it more.
Shake it more so more of the ice melts and he's not drinking so goddamn much.
Yes. He could have used one of those Gibsons, like the water Gibsons. That would have been
good for him. A little. I mean, you know, after a few of them, the bartender probably could have given him a water Gibson and he might have not noticed.
You would think for like a international, like, super spy that someone would have been like, hey, this is a problem,
right? Or I mean, you know, I bet it was like, oh damn, like, is it to the point that like he's such an alcoholic that he can't function without drinking? I bet it's to that point because he's just always drinking. Like, they show him drinking before missions, they show him like operating a car in a high speed chase while drinking a martini. Like, he's always got a drink. He's always drinking.
I don't know if that's some like weird, because like a lot of old movies have like people that are just like the cool characters, they're always smoking and drinking. And now it's like, if you see a character in a movie that is always smoking and or drinking, it's like, oh, that's too bad. But I think it was just like, that makes you a cool macho man. I can drink bourbon all day and still take down an enemy tank. Like, I don't know. Those are some unfair expectations, I think, on masculinity.
Right. I mean, yeah. I'm just looking at some of the things they list as him doing. Like, yeah, he performed some pretty risky maneuvers while under the influence of alcohol. Chronic risks include frequently drinking prior to flights, or no, to fights.
Oh, both. So I love drinking both. Before a flight.
Yeah, you should. That's okay. I think that's fine. But drinking prior to fights, driving vehicles, including in high-speed chases, high-stakes gambling, operating complex machinery or devices, contact with dangerous animals, extreme athletic performance, and sex with enemies, sometimes with guns or knives in the bed.
Well, I see that two ways. Would you want to have sex with enemies sober?
I guess, but you know, but is that the problem, or is he super drunk and thinks that it's a good idea to have sex with his enemy because he's drunk? Also, like, it's just a like lot of mistakes I've made. You know, high risk. Wow. Wow. He just living a pretty high risk lifestyle. Maybe he has a death wish.
That sounds like a James Bond movie name.
Maybe he has a death wish?
Yeah.
Or just death wish.
Death wish. James Bond.
Yeah, that's the next one. You guys can have that, you know. We came up with the title. We did the hard work for you.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Make the movie. And deal with his alcoholism, okay? Whatever. He's James Bond. I'm not going to tell him how to live his life.
I mean, clearly he's doing just fine. He's been alive since, like, then, I don't know.
And he should be dead. He should definitely be dead.
Like, a lot. Is that maybe just that is his superpower?
Like, that he can drink forever and not die from alcohol poisoning?
Like a very specific superpower.
That is it. Except for they mention, I mean, it could be that, but they actually mention in Die Another Day that his liver is not good. So, I don't know. It's not, I mean, it's not canon.
No.
Sorry.
All right.
No liver superpowers for you.
All right.
I mean, that's really all I have to say about poor James Bond.
Just needs to, you know, like maybe just go for a spritz every now and then.
Yeah.
You know? Just like a little soda water in your champagne sometime or something.
That's a good idea. That's our advice for James Bond.
Mr. Bond. All right. So there you go. There is the questionable history of the martini and the questionable history of many of its variants and the questionable drinking of James Bond.
Excellent.
Yes.
And this has been neat. It's been neat. It's been really neat hanging out with you guys.
It has been neat.
If you would like some more neat content, we are going to do a video companion to this podcast, and we're probably going to make some of the drinks that we've mentioned on this one.
Yes.
Yeah.
So hop on over to our YouTube and check out our faces.
look at our faces. Just look at them. They're great. I have been Liz June.
And I continue to be Taylor Smurl.
And this has been
Neat!
That's it.